Welcome to the More Perfect Union, the podcast that offers real debate without the hate. From the right tonight, we have...
DJ McGuire, an inebriated conservative from Suffolk, Virginia.
And from the left, we have...
Greg Matuszak, a common sense liberal and soon to be space commander in the new Star Force. From Cincinnati, Ohio.
What star sector is Cincinnati in?
It's in the star sector Alpha Omega.
Okay. Beta it's in the quadrant. Solo parsec.
Yes.
And Commander Kushmider, would you introduce yourself, please?
I'm Rebecca Kushmider, a progressive intersectional feminist. That's for you, Greg, from Kensington, Maryland.
And I'm your pilot tonight, Kevin Kelton, a passionate moderate from Los Angeles, California. I just want to point out for our audience, we joke a lot about drinking. Now, I've never sat in a room with DJ while we do this show. We do it on Skype, but we're not really as drunk as we like to pretend we are.
After all the immigration nonsense, I'm hitting the Fireball whiskey hard tonight.
See, I thought you were going to say you were hitting the tequila. That would have been a fitting tribute.
My wife is the tequila drinker in the family, not me.
Yeah, see, I had a fight with tequila in about 1993. We've never made up. We do not get along anymore.
Well, you know who is not going to make up anytime soon? The Trump administration with their immigration policy and the rest of humanity, I think.
Oh, I disagree, Kevin. They're making a lot of shit up today. Oh, yeah. Wait, that's not what you meant. Never mind.
Oh, yes, make up. Thank you. Yes, that's a good double entendre. They are making up a lot of crap today. So who wants to jump in on this sucker? I mean, this story is all over the news. There's not a whole lot to add to it.
I think we should stick to our usual program where Rebecca passionately explains why this is morally reprehensible, and then I calmly explain why it's actually worse than she thinks.
And then I'll explain why it's bad for even Democrats. Okay, go ahead.
Well, I mean, it's obviously morally reprehensible. It's this new, I even hesitate to say policy. It's this new dictate that got handed down from somewhere in the Justice Department or Stephen Miller's reptilian little Nazi brain or, you know, some crazy person who said, I know what'll stop immigration if we take the children away from the people crossing the border without paperwork that they have in advance. And the kids are being housed in former Walmart facilities. They're now building tent cities on federal land where they won't have to adhere to state childcare regulations. And you know, and there's audio now out of kids being taken from their parents and crying. We're starting to see pictures of what this is like. And it's, by any account, it is, as DJ said, morally reprehensible. And now let's throw it to you, DJ, so you can tell me how to feel worse tonight.
Yeah, it is worse because this is the inevitable result of really, frankly, 20 plus years of neglect in Latin America. 20 years of neglect of Latin America by us, to be clear. Latin America does not neglect itself. I remember, because I'm old, a president that recognized that when Central America was unstable and when it had issues and it had problems, that it needed help to fix them, or that could spill into Mexico or into the United States. I'm trying to remember that president, his last name started with an R. Yeah, that's right. He helped democratize nearly the entire region during his tenure with some help from his predecessor, Jimmy Carter. Jimmy Carter did help begin to democratize El Salvador. I should give him credit for that, credit where it's due. My point is this. If we paid more attention to the rest of the world would not feel compelled to come to our door to escape what we ignore. Guatemala is in turmoil. Honduras is in turmoil. El Salvador is in turmoil. Nicaragua is in turmoil. A region that was relatively stable no less than 30 years ago, a region that everyone believed was turning the corner, a region that in the early 1990s was considered one of the most dynamic regions of the world, has now gone into utter chaos. And the United States of America is pretending, as if it doesn't exist. And we're going to do it by taking your children away from you and housing them in old big box retail stores that no longer exist, so that when you do go back, because we're going to kick you out of the country because America, you're going to go, America is no longer the shining city on the hill. They're a horrible place. Don't go there.
And we're going to end up with people radicalized and extremely anti-American.
Yes.
I mean, that's...
Well, wait, we already have them. They're the people that are running the country.
Well, yeah.
a different kind of anti-American radical, Kevin.
So my issue right now is the two sides of the story that's being presented and the two sides of the story that's being pushed. So
is that where the Trump administration both defends the policy and denies that it exists? Are those the two sides you're talking about?
Well, not only that, we can talk about that, sure, because that's ridiculous. In fact, the White House official tweet just said, like, you know, this is not, we are officially not doing this, and we have no idea what you all are talking about.
Isn't that the entire plot of the Cell Block Tango from Chicago? He had it coming. I didn't do it, but if I'd done it.
Pretty much. You know. But, well, kind of what I'm talking about is, so this morning I was going through all the websites and all the news sites, and CNN was talking about kids in cages, and BBC America, kids in cages, NPR was like, kids who can't read or don't know classical music in cages. And they were going through all this NPR. It just really has to talk about their priorities. But then when you got to Fox News and Breitbart, and yeah, I go through both of them. Breitbart's number one story was...
Oh, let me guess. An illegal immigrant ran into my knife 10 times.
Close. I'm not kidding. You were so close.
Good callback there, DJ. Good one.
Oh my gosh, it was so close. Breitbart's number one story was illegal immigrant involved in hit and run. And it talked, and it was all about how dare this illegal immigrant left this poor child and just left him there like a dog. It was really graphic story. About how this illegal immigrant was involved in a hit and run, and it is terrible. This was a, but we didn't actually know the details. Did he see the child, or was this an accident, or was it an actual hit and run? Or there's all sorts of things. And yes, he was an illegal immigrant, but pretty much it was pushing this narrative that as soon as these bad illegal immigrants, they are going to come and get in cars and kill your children. And Fox had a similar one about how, you know, immigration and crime is up and they go hand in hand.
Oh, was that the Germany thing?
That's wrong, by the way.
Yeah, Trump was saying that Germany, because of refugees in Germany, crime is skyrocketing. And then the next thing you see is Germany's like, no, our crime rate's at the lowest it's been since 1992.
Right. Okay. The point being is that I've talked to family members, I've talked to conservatives, and I've talked to people who are like, I see nothing wrong. And the line they keep saying is, look, we throw people in jail and we take their kids away, but this is wrong.
Whenever we choose to imprison someone for a criminal offense, no matter what the hell it may be, we don't then imprison the child somewhere else.
Right.
No, when a citizen is jailed, yes, their children, they are separated from their children, but their children are not detained elsewhere. Their children are placed with family members or in foster care. There is a system by which the person is able to get in touch with their child. The child is kept in touch with the parent, even through detention or, you know, imprisonment. Social services and the prison system have communications policies. At this point, we have two agencies that don't have a link up, HHS for the children and DOJ for the adults, who are not talking to each other. The children are now being put on midnight flights and sent to foster care thousands of miles sometimes from where their parents are being detained. The parents are being given the incorrect phone number for how to reach. None of that is a bug.
Those aren't bugs, those are features, though.
I want to add to this discussion, which is all correct, that we do that only when people are convicted or when they are charged with a violent criminal offense. When someone is charged with money laundering, they generally are not ripped away from their children. When someone is charged with drunk driving, they are not ripped away from their children. When people are charged with white-collar offenses and misdemeanors, they are not ripped away from their children. So that analogy also doesn't compare.
But if you are being charged with collusion and then charged with witness tampering while on house arrest, you might be ripped away from your children, Paul Manafort.
Let's think of how hard Paul Manafort actually had to work to be pulled away from his children.
Yes. Now,
he actually being charged once didn't work.
He actually had to commit crimes after he'd been charged with committing crimes.
Exactly. He needed to be indicted twice and then commit crimes on top of that in order to be pulled away.
But it's only due to this policy change of recently that asking for asylum, asking for coming to America and saying, hey, something bad is happening and I need asylum here, is now considered a criminal offense. That's monstrous.
That is the change in policy that the Trump administration is denying. They're claiming that this is a law. It's not a law. It's a way they are enforcing existing laws to create criminality where it did not exist before. Now, I want to get to, because I love everything that you guys have said, but as I often do, I'm going to step to the 10,000-foot level and take a 10,000-foot look down on this, because I think you're really missing the big picture. Here's what I think happened. I think initially they did come up with this thinking it was a good deterrent. Once they can publicize it, it will deter people from trying to cross the border. I think that was their original idea.
Agreed.
But at some point when the outrage began, which started from the Democratic side, and the House is in the middle of trying to negotiate an immigration bill that they need for political reasons, and that immigration bill once again includes $25 billion to build Trump's border wall, someone in the White House realized, you know what? This new policy that we're denying, but this new policy of separating children so infuriates the Democrats that we can use this as a bargaining chip to get our immigration bill passed. And I guarantee you, the only thing that Trump cares about in that immigration bill is starting to build that wall. He doesn't give a shit about anything else in that bill. He might like certain aspects of it, but what he wants is funding for his border wall. This is what they are doing. They no longer believe that this idea was a good idea. They realize they made a tactical mistake. They are turning it into a strategic advantage. They are saying, look, we know it's untenable. This is what they're saying behind our backs. We know this is long-term untenable. No one wants to see children ripped away from their parents, even Republicans don't want it.
Stephen
but
Miller,
they're going to use this. No, Stephen Miller, I think, is the guy behind this. They're going to use this chip to try to get a few Democrats who are up for re-election in the Senate in 2018. And you know the usual suspects, Heidi Heitkamp, Joe Manchin, Sherrod Brown. They're going to try to use this to push those people to vote for cloture on that bill, assuming it gets through the House, so that they can try to get a passed bill with border funding to the president. This is all a political game. And the real horror of this story this week, the real horror is not that the United States is now ripping young brown children from their parents. The real horror is that a White House, a U.S. presidential administration, is using human rights abuse to try to get the upper hand in political stunts. Hey, so what about, we have to talk about other stuff in the news this week.
Indeed. There's a lot.
What about the IG report that came out on James Comey? Obviously, again, we have a situation where there's reality, and then there's the Trump administration spin, which is basically a full 100% lie version of what the report said.
Well said, Kevin.
And, you know, what do you do with that? What do you do with an administration that takes one half sentence out of a 500-page report and twists it to make it sound like the report had one finding when, in fact, it had the exact opposite finding?
You remind everybody that this is the anti-Annie's administration and that they'll take anything and turn it into a delicious pretzel. And that's exactly what Trump et al. Did with the IG report. All the stuff that Trump et al. Want to blame Comey for, the IG report essentially absolved him of. If anything, the IG report said that Comey and the FBI was too hard on Clinton and too easy on Trump, the exact opposite of what Trump wants you to believe.
Hello, everybody. It's me again, waving from 10,000 feet. Because I'd like to give a broader view of this, which is, as you guys know, one of the big criticisms in the IG report is that two FBI agents seemed to be rooting for Clinton or rooting for Trump to lose, and they exchanged some emails that suggested that, and everybody was up in arms that FBI agents actually had a preference in a presidential election. Well, hello, FBI agents, police officers, judges, they're all human, and they all have preferences in every election. Anyone who thinks that FBI agents don't have political points of view is out of their minds. As we found out to our pain in 2016, even Supreme Court justices like Ruth Bader Ginsburg have preferences about who gets elected and who doesn't. So this idea that because a couple of FBI agents might have had a preference or for a candidate or against a candidate, the idea that that somehow means the FBI is tainted is ridiculous. If that's the case, the Supreme Court was tainted and the Congress was tainted because they all have opinions, and the Senate was tainted because they all have opinions, and the Department
of Defense,
and the Kremlin
was tainted because they had an opinion.
The only people that weren't tainted was the Space Force.
The More Perfect Union. Real debate without the hate. Available on iTunes and Stitcher.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Okay, so a little earlier, DJ used a term, stuck on stupid, which I really like, and it leads us into our next story, which is President Trump's new idea for a military space force, a space army, or a space... What did he call it?
A space force. He called it a space force. He wants to create an entirely new branch of the military. He wants, basically, to shoot Chinese satellites out of the sky. And he feels like we are in danger from space, and he wants to create another branch of the military separate from the Air Force, which currently handles this stuff. The Pentagon thinks it's a bad idea. The Air Force thinks it's a bad idea, and Congress thinks it's a bad idea. I think it sounds like frickin' sharks with frickin' laser beams on their frickin' heads.
Trump's exact words were "separate but equal." To yes. the Air Force,
yes.
Which
his you know, being totally,
not
aware and tone deaf of what he's talking about, the words that come out of his mouth, that's a whole separate
that's
conversation.
Awesome.
That's
awesome.
But, you know,
let's look
at the positive side of this. They've been trying to have Infrastructure Week in this administration forever. And you could say that thanks to the announcement of the Space Force and the expanded Moon and Mars missions, this was the Moon Infrastructure Week, because he wants to colonize the Moon, which, of course, you know, we can't make fun of him because Newt Gingrich suggested this in 2012. So
Newt Gingrich has been suggesting it since the 90s. Like, Newt Gingrich is a sci-fi author in his spare time, and I'm not joking about that. Like, he talked about honeymooning in space, like a zero-gravity honeymoon. He's not a normal person. Donald Trump, like, clearly he thinks he's swinging his dick around in space. He's like, yeah, I'm gonna beat the Chinese from the air. Way up high in the air. It's the stupidest thing I've ever heard, and nobody thinks it's a good idea.
It was stupid when a president whose first and last name began with R suggested it in 2000.
Star Wars was something different. It wasn't a space force. It was a missile defense shield.
Yes. And
that didn't make it less stupid.
Even that proved to be unworkable. So the idea that we're going to now create an entire leg of our nuclear, you know, deterrent in space...
Hold it. I'm not going to defend Trump's Space Force, although, frankly, the firm for which I work will remain nameless. Dudes, more contracts.
How do you feel about
GMO wheat?
Oh, gosh, yeah.
But, you know, yeah, I actually just wanted to get more contracts in. I'm good. We can move on.
Okay, so let's get back to the real world. We have, in California, you know, we've talked a little bit about the primaries.
Let me And now, on the More Perfect Union podcast, it's the Swing District segment, California 25, with MPU special correspondent Kevin Kelton. Kevin, what's the news from California 25 this week?
Well, actually, DJ, there's a lot of news in California 25 this week. I told these guys, by the way, I'm going to tell everybody this. I told these guys before the podcast there was really nothing new to report, and we were going to do this segment anyways. But because DJ was talking before and I had a few minutes, I actually Googled some stuff and found that there is breaking news.
Oh my goodness. Breaking news.
Go on, Kevin.
Here's the news. The DCCC has added 10 more candidates to their Red to Blue campaign, and one of them is CA25's own Katie Hill, my hopefully future congresslady. So there are 10 people, 10 candidates, that the DCCC, which, by the way, for those of you who don't know, is the Democratic Congressional Campaign Committee, 10 more candidates that they have decided to fund and help support to try to create the blue wave. And I'm going to list some of them for you. In California, Josh Harder in CA10, Katie Hill in CA25, Katie Porter in CA45, Mike Levin in CA49, Cindy Anks, I'm probably mispronouncing that, but it's AXNE, in IA, Iowa 03, Scott Wallace in PA1, Susan Wild in PA7, Abigail Spanberger in VA07, Jennifer Wexton in VA10, and Dan Cole in Wisconsin 06. So those 10 candidates are now being promoted by the Democratic Congressional Campaign Committee with
money. You can call it the D-Trip.
The D-Triple C.
That's the cool shorthand for that, guys. Letting you in on that secret.
That the trip will be on a surfboard, because hopefully they'll all be riding a wave in November.
That's right. This has been the Swing District segment, California 25, sponsored by Insert Business Here. If you're not sponsoring this segment, why the hell aren't you?
And the other thing that's going on in California that I wanted to touch on this week is there's going to be a proposal on the ballot, a proposition on the ballot, to break California up into three states. Now, this idea has been in the zeitgeist for a long time. At one point, they were trying to make it seven states. Then there was six states. Now they've streamlined it into three states. And I'm not going to get into how they're breaking up California. I think it's ridiculous. I don't think it stands a chance in hell. I live in California. I know how a lot of Californians think. And I know that this state is not breaking itself up. And even if it did, by the way, that doesn't mean that they become three states, because there's a little thing called Congress and the U.S. Constitution that has to factor into this equation. But I'm wondering what you guys think of the proposal, and do you think it stands a chance in hell?
It sounds like the stupidest thing I've ever heard. And I'm living in 2018.
Yeah, but for the most part, the way California is pretty much set up around the city of Los Angeles and around the coast, you guys are mostly liberal, but the out segments, there's like a large conservative area, correct? Am I right in that?
Absolutely correct. In the north and in the south.
Right, right. And that's how that's pretty much cut up, right? So there would be like the state of like Los Angeles. Sure. And then there'd be like Northam and then Westam or whatever we call it. So you would have states that would be, instead of Los Angeles, which pretty much because of the population, you guys wouldn't be running everything because of your, you know, density and whatnot. And you're, of course, you guys have all the money because of your industry and, you know, Hollywood. You guys know everybody too, for Christ's sake.
They're also the best looking. Yeah, and have the coolest cars.
So, I mean, it's not ridiculous.
Yes, it is.
It's redonkulous, actually.
It's redonkulous. I mean, you have three segments of the population that are obviously at different political, you know, ways. And, I mean, why is that such a terrible thing?
Because every state has urban areas that happen to be more blue and rural or, you know, suburban areas that may be redder. Every state is like that. So to target California and say, well, you know, because we have people who are Republicans and we have people who are Democrats, we should gerrymander them even more than we do now in congressional districts is nonsense. Look, I'm going to tell you guys something that I know you know, but our listeners may not. This has nothing to do with California. This is about trying to break up California's 55 electoral college votes. It has always been a way for conservatives and Republicans to try to tilt the electoral college to the Republican advantage. They would like nothing better than to take those 55 electoral votes and turn 25 or 30 of them red. That's what this is about. Any arguments that you hear about, oh, it's about water rights, or oh, this is going to give people more autonomy, and it's going to bring people closer to local government, that is all, I don't want to curse, it's BS. This has been in the works forever. It is a scam for people that want to break up the largest state of electoral college votes. It's not going to happen because we are the largest state of electoral college votes, and we like it that way.
Yeah, I live in one of the very few states that actually had a part of itself separate, and that was during the Civil War. That should tell you the kind of things that are necessary for this to happen.
Yeah, how did that work out for you guys?
Ask Joe Manchin.
Yeah. I mean, West Virginia is now a state because of all this, but
yeah.
You know, look, to some extent, I sympathize with the Inland Empire. They are continuously ignored by the leadership in California, particularly over the last decade or two. And I can see where they're coming from. But the fact of the matter is, as I understand it, and granted, I live on the other coast, Los Angeles and California don't agree on much. But they do agree on stiffing the Inland Empire at every single opportunity. So this is not going to go anywhere because Los Angeles and San Francisco don't want it to. So it's not happening. So the fact of the matter is the Inland Empire has got to figure something else out because breaking free of the rest of California is just not in the cards. It just ain't happening.
Well, guys, look at the bottom of the rundown. I just put in a picture of what the breakup would look like. Isn't that the most ridiculous thing you've ever seen? You know, you want to talk about gerrymandering.
What?
If you want to break up the state, think about how they broke up North Dakota and South Dakota. Think of North Carolina, South Carolina. Think of Virginia and West Virginia. They're relatively contiguous land masses. What they've done here, if they really wanted to break up California, you'd break it into three sections. That's not what they're doing. They're gerrymandering all of the blue votes into one section.
I mean, if you were going to break it, if you wanted to break up California, it should be done basically on a longitudinal basis.
I'm looking at this map. That's not what I'm seeing. I'm seeing basically the red parts of the Inland Empire all being drawn into Southern California. Northern California is going to be dominated by San Francisco and Sacramento. And the fact of the matter is that the extreme north part of the state flipped over to the Democrats about 20 years ago, as I understand it. So you've got two blue states and one red. In fact, that's why they pictured it that way. Northern California and California are essentially going to be the blue states, and Southern California is going to be the Inland Empire finally declaring its independence. But again, this is not going to happen because San Francisco and Los Angeles, again, they don't agree on much. But they do agree on stiffing the Inland Empire as often as possible. So this just ain't happening, folks. The Inland Empire has got to figure out another way.
Yeah, in 2012, we had a Secretary of State in Ohio who was kind of upset that how Obama had won the election. And so he figured out that if Ohio had broken up its 18 electoral college votes or something like that, something, maybe it would have gone more Republican, which it probably could have. So he put a bill out and he suggested as Secretary of State that we, instead of go as a block, all 18, and this would pretty much take Ohio out of our swing state status, you know, which, as we all know,
which you're not anymore.
Which, wait a second.
Well, no,
Ohio is
a bellwether. It's not a swing state, but it is a bellwether.
Donald
Trump carried the state by 9%. You're not a bellwether anymore. You are a Republican state.
We are not.
You are a Republican state who will be governed by assholes for as long as you live.
I'm going to say this again, and it's word is bond. We are the most important state in every election. There. I don't know how more simply I can say it. What stopped him, though, was that people make money off elections. We make a lot of money when people come and send me flyers and people give me, mailers. And I just did two surveys today. Why? Because, I will say this again, Ohio is the most important election in a state in every election. Why am I the only one who sees this?
Because you're out of your mind.
So I do want to touch on something that is more pop culture this week, and it's this Chris Hardwick story.
Yes, I've been following this, and this popped up on Twitter, I think on Friday afternoon. And this is fascinating because we've seen these Me Too moments. In a nutshell, Chris Hardwick is a very popular podcaster. He's a talk show host. He's a very popular in the nerd culture. But in short, an ex-girlfriend of his wrote something on the internet and accused him of sexual assault and some other pretty terrible things, bad behavior on his assault. Within 12 hours, he had lost his job at a network, at AMC Network, and he had lost several speaking engagements at San Diego Comic-Con. And this is where we kind of get into this discussion, and a lot of people defended him, and a lot of people, of course, taking him down, and it happened real fast over the Twitter. And this is where we've talked about these accusations. There hasn't been a pattern. Ex-girlfriends haven't been coming out. He's married. He's actually married to Patty Hearst's daughter, if that's another pop culture thing.
Yeah, that's weird. Actually.
Wait, he's married to Patty Hearst's daughter, but he had a girlfriend that he was...
The girlfriend is from a while before the marriage.
Yeah, oh. Previous girlfriend.
It's consecutive relationships, not...
Consecutive. So it's one of those things. Is this he said, she said, and should we just let them work it out? Do we automatically assume the woman's telling the truth, which we should? Or do we assume that... he gets his turn in court, but she's not pressing charges. In fact, she has never actually even named him by name in any of his posts.
Well, she described him, and then it was pretty obvious, and he's already acknowledged that he had a relationship with her.
Right. It's one of those things, like, so what are we... Is there a basis or a line of... reasoning for these accusations?
Well, let's go back to what I think you were getting at is, is the court of public opinion the right place to be prosecuting these cases? I fall into the category, and I've said this so many times on this podcast, that yes, sexual harassment and sexual molestation is a horrible thing, but we have to bring them back to the proper place to adjudicate them, which is the legal system. They should not be adjudicated on TMZ. Excuse me. They should not be adjudicated on TMZ. They should not be adjudicated in Twitter. I don't know what happened between Chris Hardwick and his girlfriend. I read one article. It sounded like they had a really dysfunctional relationship. Maybe even worse. I know she claims that he forced himself on her many times. Again, I'm not going to get into, who's telling the truth here. I'm saying I don't believe... people should be losing their jobs based on accusations. That should happen when a court of law and a jury has found criminal conduct.
What do you think, Rebecca?
I don't know who this guy is, so I have no prejudgment. Greg asked me about it, and I'm like, I saw the name because Will Wheaton, who turns out to be a buddy of Kevin's, tweeted something about, having to process things about his best friend, and I'm actually scrolling through Will Wheaton's Twitter feed right now to see if he did process it. There's no reason not to believe her.
But there's no reason to believe everything she said. And again, I'm not shaming the victim. I don't want to... We will get those emails. I know we're going to get those emails.
I don't know what she said. I don't know what he stands accused of. I basically am not in a position to render judgment on any of this.
Well, none of us are. That's the point. None of us are. So why is he losing jobs?
Because somebody looked at it and said, yeah, I believe he could have done this.
Well, either that or no network or no body wants to be associated with someone who's even accused.
And it was called the blacklist in the 40s and 50s. And I'm telling you, we have a sexual blacklist starting now. DJ and I clashed on this 3 weeks ago. We don't need to redo it. We're not going to redo it tonight. I'm just warning the listeners. I'm warning the listeners. It sounds like justice, but it may be something else.
But the one thing to remember is that women don't, victims of sexual abuse in general, don't always have an easy avenue into the justice system. And that's all I want to say.
No, it's true. They don't. You're right. And we have to fix that. Okay? The answer is not writing anonymous articles or writing articles about anonymous ex-boyfriends and waiting for people to out him and then, you know, having everybody in the world come down on him based on one person's account.
Well, like I said, this one's a tough one. This is one that we knew would happen eventually. In one's past, we have seen someone come forward and then we've seen like 7 people come forward. Or in Donald Trump's case, we've seen 23 people come forward. And
he hasn't lost his job.
Not yet. But, you know, we hope. But, you know, with Weinstein, we saw a lot of people come forward. And every time one of these accusations, we've seen people, Matt Lauer, we saw many people come forward. Matt Lauer's a scumbag. I just need to get that off my chest for, you know, all these things. But this is one that we haven't. And should we have waited? Should it was AMC wrong? That was the cable network. Should they have waited or should they have stuck by him? But if they stuck by him for too long, it's really tricky. This is a really sensitive time. And right now there are several actors who work with him who say things like, I don't know what to say, so I'm reserving judgment and let me process this. And that's the quote that's been, I need time to process this.
And again, it's such a simple premise. I can't understand why the rest of the world doesn't understand it. The place to process it is in the criminal justice system. It is not for Will Wheaton to decide who's right on this. It is not for, you know, I'm just going to pick names out of a hat. It is not for Beyonce to determine what's the truth here. It's for a rigorous investigation by police and then turning it over to prosecutors who may decide to prosecute and then presenting the evidence to a jury and let a jury decide. This has been the system in the United States since just after the Salem witch trials. And to go back now to a public Salem witch trial of every person that gets accused of some type of sexual impropriety makes me personally uncomfortable. I cannot force my views onto the rest of the country. The rest of the country is going to come to some kind of a landing place on this. I'm just voicing one person's, you know, I just want to be the person to say, beware. We may be creating something a lot different than what we think we're creating.
What we are creating is the structures of the market that are determining whether or not someone accused of this behavior can in fact be profitable for a corporation. AMC has decided
the blacklist, DJ.
And we're going to go through this again. Given what we now know about the Soviet Union, including how much it actually did infiltrate both Washington and Hollywood at that time, again, DJ, folks who are younger than you are take a very different view of what Hollywood felt it had to do.
I didn't call you on it that week, but I have to kind of lovingly and with a smile on my face call you on it this week. You are now in the position of defending the Hollywood blacklist. And I'm not sure that's where you want to be.
I am telling you that in light of the Venona files and everything that has come out of that came out of Moscow in the 1990s, I would say that what Hollywood felt it had to do makes a lot more sense now than it did then. The fact of the
matter, I would say that you are misinterpreting history.
Well, I've actually known people who have had to deal with Soviet surveillance, and I have known people who have had to deal with the communist regime up front. So I guess I'm just myself, and feel free
DJ,
to cut this, Kevin.
You are defending the Hollywood blacklist,
and you are defending communists, Kevin. You were defending people who associated with the Communist Party and
yes,
who were very
and
open
you know
about
what?
It.
One of them is going to probably be the Democratic nominee in the 2020 election. You know what? It's
well,
not
that
a crime. It's
that
not a crime to think that communism might have a place in the country
I'm not
or
saying
in the
it's
world,
a cr- I'm
say.
Not saying it's a crime, but what I am saying is that
or socialism or anything else.
Socialism and communism are two different things. Anybody in Europe will tell you that.
Actually, sometimes they get conflated, and a lot of people who were communists in the 40s were really socialists.
Well, they
my great uncle was a communist.
They tried to say they were. But the fact of the matter, the fact
he was
of the
bad
matter,
at it though. He like had a Ferrari and shit.
Yeah, that messes things up. But the
sounds like he was a great sounds like he was very good at it.
But the
from
fact,
each according to his ability, to each according to his need, he needed a Ferrari.
He needed a Ferrari.
He had to have it.
But the fact of the matter
Ferrari
is
messed
the,
up his shoulder, though. He eventually had to sell it because the gear shift was so stiff it was causing him joint problems.
There you go. But this is, you know, it, here in the early 21st century, the market has made itself very clear in that they – that we are now in a situation where the American people, by and large, when it comes to allegations of sexual misconduct, they believe the woman. And that's okay. Now, whether or not Mr. Hardwick, you know, if Mr. Hardwick is indeed innocent of these charges, then he will have, I am sure, a miraculous recovery to his career because Americans love second chances. We're addicted to them. So, you know, 2, 3, 5, 10 years from now, Mr. Hardwick will get himself on another show somewhere and we'll talk about, oh, isn't it wonderful I managed to resurrect his career? And yeah, we really all went around the bend on that. For crying out loud, Dan Rather has fans under 30 who don't remember how he thoroughly botched his reporting on the 2004 election. If Dan Rather can recover his reputation, anybody can. Let's all sit back. Let
wow.
the facts come through. And, you know, if Mr. Hardwick has indeed been wronged, rest assured the American people, through their consumer
that's
decisions,
justice. Yes,
will
that's
bring
justice.
His
you know
career
what? We'll ruin
back.
Your career now. And if we figure out in 3 or 5 or 10 years that maybe we were a little too overreactive, you'll get a chance to reestablish your career then.
Oh,
DJ.
He'll get more than a chance. The American people will throw themselves and their dollars at Mr. Hardwick's feet.
His chance should be in a court of law, not five
He's
years from now.
Probably getting a chance on YouTube right now.
And speaking of people who had second chances, you know, another person who got to revitalize their career was Roseanne Barr when she got her show back in 2017, and then she proceeded to dunk it again. So we wanted to end tonight by looking at the potential for a spinoff for the Roseanne cast with a different title and a different format. What do you guys think? Should there be a spinoff, and would you watch it?
If it was sponsored by Ambien.
The rumors are that ABC is in talks with Roseanne to sign off all of her rights to the show and to create a program that would either be like The Conners or focus on Darlene and possibly would just be called Darlene. And she would relinquish any sort of creative control over it, which, you know, for the rest of the cast and crew who, you know, didn't suffer Ambien induced racism or native born racism, that would actually be a fairly nice outcome to get to continue to have that show with those writers and minus the racist in chief.
Yeah, but here's my bitch about that. So she would then give up creative control, and then she would make, I don't know, a couple $100,000 a season.
Whoa, whoa! Are you talking about Roseanne?
Yeah.
You think she's you think that they're negotiating over a couple hundred thousand dollars?
Millions?
Millions, yeah, tens of millions.
Lots of money.
All right, sorry. I don't deal with your Hollywood money. I'm sorry, Kevin.
Roseanne went full racist and she's going to get paid for it.
Right.
That's what I want people to understand, that if you end up watching this show, you are in some semblance rewarding ABC for giving Roseanne a $10, $20, $50 million buyout, because those are the numbers.
And for the record, it's not Firefly. It's Roseanne. I mean,
well said.
Right. Let's keep this in perspective, people. It's not the second season of Firefly. Mic drop. I'm ending on that one.
And with that, we want to thank our listeners for listening, because none of us will get a $10 million buyout if we decide to give up our show. Please follow us on Twitter at #MPUPodcast and on Facebook at facebook.com/MorePerfectUnionPodcast, and share our link on your Facebook timeline so your friends can discover us as well. And if you like political debate and would like to debate with people like us between shows, there's a little Facebook political group called Open Fire Politics. We're all there. Lots of really smart, informed people are there. It gets a little heated at times, but it can also be a lot of fun. So if you've got opinions you want to share, that's the place to do it. And with that, what are you guys looking forward to this week?
I'm going to write the second season of Firefly, but it's going to be mostly involved with Space Force.
So, Greg, what would be your theme song for the Space Force if they were a television show?
Oh, I'm glad you asked. Space Force, Space Force, we're separate but equal. Space Force, Space Force, not Air Force. Because we know that we don't have oxygen if we leave the door open. Space Force.